May it please the court. My name is Michelle Azar, attorney registration 26835, and I am here on behalf of Mr. Carmesino. Mr. Carmesino tried to plead guilty not once or twice or even three times, but Mr. Carmesino tried to plead guilty four times in the district court. And although his plea was knowing, voluntary, intelligent, and although this plea was accepted by the prosecution, even offered by the prosecution, and accepted by the defense, the court flatly rejected it each and every time. The question before this court is, did the lower court abuse its discretion when it rejected repeatedly his pleas? The answer is a resounding yes. This case is straightforward. When the court has a bright line policy, as the court did in this case, that flatly rejects a plea, it is not only not an exercise of discretion, but thereby an abuse of discretion.
Pardon me, counsel. Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say, to construe what the court said as having a bright line policy as opposed to simply saying, look, I don't accept pleas when people maintain their innocence? This wasn't originally offered to the court as an Alford plea, was it?
It was not, Judge. And there's a couple things there. One is, I do believe that this case is differentiated a little bit from Alford, because in Alford, first of all, that case dealt with an acceptance of a plea versus a rejection of the plea. That was the issue on appeal. But second, in Alford, the defendant was pleading to a second-degree murder charge where a factual basis substantially similar to the first-degree assault murder charge, what he was originally charged with. And he was saying, it wasn't me, I didn't shoot that person. In this case, this was a completely fictitious charge made up by the prosecution in order for the defendant to get the bargain for benefit of the non-mandatory sentence. Now, in this case, there was no factual basis for that plea at all. And the court was requiring this defendant to have a factual basis to the charges that were going to be dismissed. According to this judge, apparently he would have to admit to each and every element of the offenses that were charged but dismissed, I guess including the menacing charge, which was also going to be dismissed, although that wasn't really spoken about. But the more important as to policy, the court repeatedly stated on the record, you know, this is my policy. I do not take pleas from innocent people.
Actually, didn't the court say, I don't like to take pleas from innocent people?
If I have a moment, Judge, I believe on January 4th, on the January 4th hearing, that page 2, line 23, the court says, well, you know what my policy is on that. I don't like to take pleas from people who are innocent. And he said he was innocent, so that's fine. I respect his choice. He does say like, but it's very clear that he doesn't get involved in a discussion with Mr. Carmesino about the ins and outs of this case.
Isn't that, for the first hearing, isn't that because nobody could even give the court what the factual underpinnings of the case were even all about?
Well, the defense lawyer attempted to make a factual basis and was listing a factual basis from the original plea, from the original charge. Of course, Mr. Carmesino did not admit to strangling the victim. He wouldn't go that far. And guilt, establishing guilt or admitting guilt, is often elusive and uncertain in a lot of cases. Mr. Carmesino is not in a situation where he is denying complete guilt. I think there are situations where a court is not abusing its discretion when it rejects a plea based on innocence, when a person proclaims innocence. That is a reasonable thing to do, and that is within a court's discretion at certain times.
Did Mr. Carmesino ever admit to any conduct that would have constituted second-degree assault?
He admitted to, I don't know to the level of second-degree assault, Judge, but he definitely admitted to knowing the victim, assaultive conduct on the victim, putting his hands on the victim, and a domestic violence situation.
Does that constitute second-degree assault? It might constitute third-degree assault.
Correct, and I think it does. It is more accurately in line with third-degree assault.
Is that somewhat different? A court saying I won't take a plea from an innocent person, than a court saying I won't take a plea from someone who doesn't admit the conduct that even constitute this level of crime.
Well, Judge, there is no reason why he should have to admit to each and every element of a second-degree assault charge when he's not pleading to that charge. He's admitting responsibility for assaultive behavior in this case, and that should suffice. He's not admitting zero responsibility. There is no, the Rule 11 in case law doesn't require a defendant to get up and shake away any doubt of his guilt. That is not required. People accused plead guilty every day in the Colorado courts based on all sorts of different reasons and to fictitious charges every day. It is bad public policy for a court, for a district court, to say, sorry, I am not going to take any pleas that are either to a fictitious charge or a charge that you are maintaining your innocence on. That would collapse the system.
In the first couple hearings, as I read what happened, is that the defendant wasn't even ready to enter any plea yet. He was confused about whether he wanted even to enter into a plea agreement. And isn't the judge, in context, entitled to take that into account as well?
Well, I think on the very first initial hearing, first of all, in all of these hearings, they were very brief. I mean, there wasn't anything that was very intricate, or there wasn't a lot of questions asked at all. And I think that's a problem. When we talk about discretion, I don't think that the court delved into this half as much as it needed to do before it rejected the plea. But to answer your question as to the first time the parties came to the court with a disposition, it was a very, very brief hearing, and the court stated to Mr. Carmartino did have some hesitation, and I think my reading of it was that he wanted to know if he could plead at a later date. He was confused about dates and if he could still have some more time to think about it. And I think the court rightly continued it. I don't think the court abused its discretion in that first hearing. I don't think that that's the problem in this case. But it is. But as far as hesitation goes, and I do think that that is a proper consideration. However, in this case, he went before the court, like I said, four times. And I don't think you can classify or describe Mr. Carmartino's failure to enter this plea as because he was hesitant to do so. He wanted to do so each and every time. He did not want to face a mandatory prison sentence and go to trial, which he was forced to do. So I think at the beginning, yeah, there was a hesitation issue, and I think that's appropriate for the court, but that should not rule the day, because when he comes back again and again and again and even says, you know, Judge, I'll admit that I choked her if that's what you need me to say. Oh, I don't buy it. I'm not buying it. We're going to trial. That is overstepping the line.
Well, if I may,
mm-hmm.
Isn't it appropriate for a judge to be concerned with the statement, I'll admit that I choked her if that's what you want me to say, when the fellow has denied it before? At this point, isn't it a fair reading of the record that the judge is really concerned about where this guy's going, what he really wants to do, and when he comes out with something like that, isn't it appropriate for the judge to be concerned about a comment like that?
Well, it could raise a red flag, as I said, if he was taking no responsibility at all. I think it's a different situation if he's saying, I wasn't there, I didn't lay a hand on her, taking zero responsibility. The level of guilt, it is relevant, and he was admitting guilt. So I think that that's where the court needs to go with this. The other issue is, what is the scope of discretion for a district court in rejecting a plea? And the scope of discretion involves the fairness to the prosecution and the defense. If it's a reasonable plea for the prosecution, which it was, the prosecution certainly had no issue with this. The prosecution wanted this plea to go forward, you know, whether it be the F4 or the F6 right before the day of trial. Was it fair to the defense? Yes. It was a knowing, voluntary, intelligent plea that he wanted. And the third consideration is the public interest. And a public interest mostly is dealing with, you know, sentencing, if there's any impingement upon his sentencing authority. If anything, this plea enhanced the court's sentencing authority, because if he was found guilty, the court would have no choice except to send this man to prison. Under the plea agreement, he could sentence him to probation, community corrections, or prison. So there was no impingement on his sentencing authority. So, Judge, I believe that that if we stop, and again, we go back to public policy. This case has broad public policy considerations, because if a court's saying it has just across the board policy, which this court, I believe, did, saying that I'm not going to accept a guilty plea from those that he perceives as innocent, well, then a whole lot of people aren't going to be able to plead guilty in the state of Colorado. People do this every day. And there is not a majority of defendants who appear before a court that agree with each and every statement in the police report or each and every version of a victim. So there's always questions about how much guilt or responsibility a person who stands before the court is going to take. But to require that they have to admit to the very level of charge that is actually being dismissed in this case is inappropriate, and it was an abuse of discretion. And I asked this court to remand it to the lower court for the imposition of an F6, because that was the last offer that was made before the court in front of Judge Enquist. And that was denied.
Well, let me ask you about that one for a minute.
Sure.
Because as I read the record, the Judge Jackson said it was in the record. He set a time frame for when he would accept pleas.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get around to that request being made of Judge Enquist, that time frame is long gone. Why couldn't she just have said, too late? And under the Jasper case, that would have been perfectly appropriate.
But she didn't say it was too late. She actually herself said she wouldn't accept a plea on that date. And why that's an issue is because, first of all, the district attorney is going in with an F6 because in their eyes, their case had actually gotten weaker. And they felt the appropriate plea at that time was a Class 6 felony. Why it was rejected by Enquist was based on initially misinformation, thinking that Mr. Carmesino had been the one, in fact, rejecting the plea on two occasions, which the prosecutor corrected her and said, no, that's not the case. It was actually the court, and the court rejected it because Mr. Carmesino wouldn't agree that he strangled her, wouldn't admit that. And Judge Enquist properly and reasonably shot back, well, so the plea must have been based on the fact that he strangled her. Well, no, Judge, it wasn't. And she had to be clarified again that the plea actually had no factual basis that indicated strangling. So at that point, she said, I'm not taking anything, but I will take an F4. And the fact is, we don't know what that F4 was, if it was for the mandatory offense or for the non-mandatory, because it wasn't ever stated. But more importantly, this is a separation of powers issue. She is in no position to make an offer to Mr. Carmesino. That is injecting herself into, you know, plea negotiations, which is improper, and it's an improper role for her. That wasn't the offer on the table. The offer on the table was the Class 6 felony, and I believe that was also an abuse of discretion to do that. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thanks. You've got about 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
May it please the court, Will Kozlowski, registration number 37824, on behalf of the people. Defendant's claim fails for two reasons. First, the trial court did not reject defendant's plea solely on the basis of a policy prohibiting guilty pleas from innocent people or people claiming innocence. And secondly, to the extent he did so, any such policy is not arbitrary and was not applied in an arbitrary fashion. As to the first, as Judge Bernard stated, initially the defendant was hesitant to plead guilty. The Judge Jackson started through the Rule 11 advisement, and when he said, I believe he said, you'll be giving up your right to a trial, and the defendant didn't say anything, and the judge said, you look hesitant, I'm not sure you want to do this. It looks like you don't want to do this. It looks like you're confused, so I'll continue the providency hearing. Once again, at the next hearing, defendant asked for more time, which was given. And at the last one, or the third one, that's the subject of this appeal, defendant wouldn't admit to strangling or choking the victim. And at that point, Judge Jackson said, you continued this twice, you didn't want to plead before, and now you won't admit to doing the charged offense, and I'm denying the plea. So based on those two things, he denied the plea. He didn't even mention a policy until after, when the discussion further went. Secondly, to the extent that he denied the plea based on a policy, I believe it's advisable to look at exactly what Judge Jackson said his policy was. He said, I don't take pleas from innocent people, or I don't like to take pleas from innocent people. And I think if you read the record, the clear implication of the policy was he doesn't take pleas from people that he is, if he is uncomfortable with their factual guilt. Because after he rejected the plea, he said, I don't have the victim here, I don't have the prosecution here. So basically you have the defense attorney providing the factual basis and the defendant saying, no, I didn't do that. And so Judge Jackson is left to say, well, I don't even know if this guy did anything, did the second degree assault, so I'm not taking his plea. And Alford explicitly approves of that policy. In note 10, it says, a plea should not be accepted unless there's a factual basis. And in Alford, and in most of the cases that are cited in the briefs, including Gaskins, which the defendant cites, it's clear that the defendant's guilt is not in question, and the defendant is, and it's just the defendant maintain saying, oh, I'm innocent. But everybody else is basically agreed that he's factually guilty. And in the Gaskins case, it says, which in that case, the appellate court said that the trial court improperly rejected the plea solely based on a claim of innocence. But there was strong evidence of guilt, and the court said that you should, a plea should be rejected, should not be rejected unless the court is fully satisfied of a factual basis and the facts disclose no plain legal defense. That's not the case here. As the defendant makes clear in her opening brief, this was a close case. The defendant said he didn't choke her. The victim said he did, but she never sought medical attention to verify the injuries to her neck. And if you go over the trial, it was a close case. And finally,
to that a little bit, I take it that when this was brought in front of Judge Jackson, he didn't know any of this. I mean, there was nobody got up and said, well, she says this, he says this, we have medical evidence, we don't have medical evidence. All he knew was that there was a charge of he choked the lady.
No, I think that's correct. And it was later discussed at the January 27th hearing. They kind of went over it again about why the plea was rejected. And the lead prosecutor was there that time, and she provided the facts as they thought they would prove them at trial. And the defense attorney got up and said, basically gave their version of events, and Judge Jackson said, well, it looks like you got something to work with. That's why we have trials. So I think it's clear that Judge Jackson rejected the plea because he was uncomfortable with the defendant's factual guilt, which is completely proper.
Well, Mr. Krasinski, aren't pleas entered on occasion when there is a waiver of a factual basis?
And absolutely.
It basically goes like this. I'm charged with a class 4 felony. I'm going to plead to a class 5 felony to get the benefit of a plea disposition. And the only one that's going to fit what the prosecution and the defense want to do sentencing-wise doesn't have anything to do factually with what I was charged with. And in those circumstances, the defendant expressly waives a factual basis, right?
Right.
Was that the case here?
Yeah, I think Judge Jackson would have been happy to do that if the defendant admitted to his factual guilt as to the charged crime. There's no indication that Judge Jackson wouldn't have let him plead to what he would have actually been convicted of, because clearly there wasn't a factual basis for that. And I don't think it's uncommon for, I mean, I know I've read providency hearings like this where the trial court says, well, what did you do? And the defendant admits to it. And he says, well, you're pleading to this, and you understand that the prosecution can't prove this and isn't even trying to prove it because it's a made-up charge, but you're willing to do that. You're willing to take this plea because you think it's likely you'll be convicted. And I think that's completely proper. And finally, to the extent Judge Jackson's policy could be construed as, I don't take pleas from people claiming innocence, which I don't think is the case, but to the extent that is the issue, I think that policy is defendable also, based as set forth in the Cox case that I cited in my brief. In that case, they actually had a trial, and it was clear from the record that the jury had reached a verdict on the plea, on the charge that the defendant wanted to plead to. And the prosecutor said, this is perfect under Alford because you know he's guilty because the jury found it. And the trial court said, no, if he's not willing to admit to it, I'm not going to take the plea. And the Federal Circuit said that was proper. So if there are no further questions, I ask that you affirm defendant's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you, if you want it, you've got about 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
There was an abuse of discretion here because this judge did not look to the particular circumstances of the case before him, and that is what is required. The court was not privy to all the things that the prosecution knew and all the things that the defense knew about this case, the weaknesses, the strengths, the credibility, all of those things. He was not privy to the state of the evidence, yet he drew a bold black line saying, if you can't admit full responsibility for the crime that is going to be dismissed as a result of this plea bargain, you are not going to plead guilty in my courtroom. And nobody will, because that is my policy. That is very clear from the court's words. He also stated at the very beginning that the very first time he was to take the plea, that I think it was November 23rd, he stated to Mr. Carmesino, I am not trying to talk you into the plea. I'm not trying to talk you out of the plea. It is completely your decision if you want to enter into a plea. The only reason why I would ever reject a plea, this is Judge Jackson's words, is if it wasn't appropriate for the public. It wasn't appropriate for public interest reasons. Otherwise,
is it their innocence for public reason?
Well, that, as I said, that's a public policy that would circumvent the entire system that we have now. Most of the pleas that are taken but many, many pleas that are taken in this state don't have a factual basis, or a factual basis is waived. If we were going to,
do you think there are many taken no felonious conduct at all of any kind?
Well, he did, I mean, not felonious conduct, but assaultive conduct. And I do think that happens all the time, depending on the state of the case. The prosecution is the one in the position to assess the merits of the case, not the judge. The prosecution is. And it should be a very, very extreme circumstance when the court oversees the plea negotiations and jumps in and says, I won't take this plea, over the prosecution's wish that the plea go forward.
That's not the law in Colorado, is it? I mean, the law in Colorado doesn't say anything that has to be an extreme circumstance. It says the judge has to exercise discretion, which means taking an independent view of what's going on.
That's correct. There's no Colorado case law directly on point regarding discretion, the scope of discretion when rejecting a plea. There isn't a case on that.
Isn't it just a matter of looking at the record and seeing whether the judge has done something independently?
I believe that there's a lot of guidance in this area, Your Honor, and like U.S. versus Amidown, McCoy, they all talk about the fact that it should be in the very rare circumstance that the judge should usurp the prosecution's authority, because it's the prosecution's domain to offer the plea.
Thank you. Your time.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course. And